RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the May 22nd, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, about to be joined by my co-host, Daniel Galvan. This week's episode of the podcast is presented by Roman. We'll give you a special offer that Roman has for the MMA Report podcast listeners later on in the podcast. But coming here on this week's edition of the show, we're going to take a look back at UFC Rochester, give our five big takeaways from the event. Also, we're going to start a two-part series, part one this week, part two next week. But part one this week is going to be myself and Daniel's top five valuable non-UFC fighters. And that term valuable can mean one thing to one person and another thing to another. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how my list and Daniel's list do vary on. Also, we're going to preview Thursday's PFL2, give you our five reasons why we will be watching this event. Also, we're going to talk about the bare knuckle press conference that took place earlier this week. Plus, going to have four interviews for you. You'll hear my conversation with Ian Heinisch, Zach Cummings, Walt Harris, and Tarion Ware. Plus, I got a tip for the fight fan, and it was a personal thing that happened to me on Wednesday. So we'll get into that later on in the podcast. But Daniel, UFC Rochester was last weekend, and we kind of want to talk about our takeaways. So I really just want to kind of start off with you. Was there a major takeaway you had from that event?
Well, the thing is, I think when we previewed the event, Jason, we kind of glossed over it. We kind of looked at it, and we previewed Dos Anjos, Kevin Lee, and that's about it. I think we may have mentioned that Charles Oliveira's fighting and maybe Megan Anderson. But on paper, heading into the card, Jason, I wasn't super excited for a UFC Rochester. But my big takeaway is, for those that tuned in, you got one heck of a show. Watching top to bottom, Jason, the prelims had plenty of excitement with some sick flying knee knockout for Michael Pereira, all the way up to the main event, which was just a phenomenal fight between Dos Anjos and Kevin Lee, and the Ladd and Eubanks fight. So overall, Jason, my big takeaway is UFC Rochester was a big win if you're a fight fan. If you subscribe to ESPN+, I think if you tuned into the card, it really doesn't get much better in terms of in-the-cage entertainment.
Yeah, I didn't watch this fight card live. I was at a retirement party on Saturday night, so I watched this fight card all after the fact. And yeah, it was a very enjoyable fight card to watch. I started off watching the prelims and then watched the main card. And you know, I think it was either Sunday or Monday when I went on social media and said, hey, you know, I'm getting ready to watch, you know, the UFC Rochester card. You know, how would you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10? And for a lot of people, I would say most of them, I think we're in, you know, pretty much sevens. There was one person who rated as a 9, and basically their rating was, hey, it was a fight night card, and it was really enjoyable to watch. I'll tell you, I think my big takeaway, I think it'd be very easy to say Rafael Dos Anjos and what he was able to do against Kevin Lee, but my takeaway is the reflection of Kevin Lee in that Instagram story video that he put out after the fight. You know, you don't see many fighters kind of really open up to their fan base on how they're feeling. And so to me, it was about Kevin Lee, who clearly, you know, he's in a position now where he's sitting there and going, okay, what changes do I have to make to get to where I want to go? I mean, it's something we don't normally see from fighters, but man, that was a really interesting video that Kevin Lee did put out.
Now, Jason, I haven't seen the video. So kind of what did he go and say on his Instagram story?
It's basically sitting there and questioning kind of like, hey, what am I not doing? And, you know, it makes you kind of wonder where Kevin Lee is at currently, if it's one of these situations where, you know, maybe a change in scenario, a scene, you know, he said, he goes, I don't know what happened. And anyone could go on there. And this is his quote. He says, don't know what happened out there tonight. I thought I did everything right leading up to this fight. Tried to eliminate every little distraction, everything that wasn't good for me. I swear I felt something. Everything was falling into place, was talking to me even before I got out there, and still wasn't enough. This expletive sometimes be like the highest of highs and lowest of lows. It shouldn't make you question what you believe in. I don't know. I've been through a lot of expletive in my life. This ain't really going to be expletive. So I think you can kind of figure out what those expletives are.
Yeah, well, that's real interesting. And I think if you're looking at it from Kevin Lee's perspective, you watch that main event, what could have been different? And I think the answer is pretty clear, Jason. It has to be the gas tank. Because you watch that main event, if that's a 15-minute fight, Kevin Lee's your winner. I thought – I had him ahead in the scorecards heading into round four, and I just thought watching that fourth round, the gas tank was empty, and Rafael Dos Anjos took advantage of it. Now, the fight itself was incredibly close leading up to it. It was action-packed and back and forth, and it was a fight where RDA definitely showed that he absolutely has more – he has one more run in him in the welterweight division. Incredibly well-rounded and talented against a guy in Kevin Lee. But for Kevin Lee, he had a lot of success in that cage. I just think if you're looking at what he needs to do moving forward, it's rounds four and five. That has to be the focus, because I do think when you look at his peaks in that fight, it's in round one, it's in round two. And if he was able to extend that or just survive to the 25 minutes, he would have found himself the victor. Also, maybe just fighting at lightweight. That may just be where he needs to be fighting instead of at 170 pounds, Jason. But watching that main event, I think that's kind of the suggestion. But you look at the way Rafael Dos Anjos kind of rebounded after back-to-back losses to Colby Covington and Kamaru Usman. I mean, that's something Kevin Lee can look at and be like, I can put myself in that position going forward of turning things around.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. Maybe do we see a change in training camps for Kevin Lee going forward? I'm sure my number two takeaway is probably somewhere in your top five, and that to me is Felicia Spencer getting that win over Megan Anderson. She looked absolutely tremendous. You know, later on the show, when you hear my conversation with Zach Cummings, of course, Zach is a training partner of Megan, and he talks about kind of, I mean, look, Megan's had a lot of pressure on her ever since she came in there, but you know, to me, my big takeaway is the performance by Felicia Spencer, and really, you know, probably the next opponent for Chris Cyborg, if Chris Cyborg has another fight in the UFC.
Yeah, here's my hot takeaway. My number two, in relation to Felicia Spencer, this was the result the UFC needed in this fight. That is my hot take, Jason, and I'll explain it. I think heading into it, Megan Anderson is a fighter the UFC has had on their radar when it comes to building the women's 145-pound division since its inception. But the reason why I think Felicia Spencer getting the win over Megan Anderson is a positive is that headed into this fight, you literally only need one hand to count all the relevant women featherweight fighters. With Felicia Spencer getting this victory over Megan Anderson, she adds her name to the list. And this win kind of extends and broadens the women's 145-pound mix. Now we're excited for a potential Felicia Spencer Cyborg fight. And on the flip side, Megan Anderson, she did go in there and kind of get ran through. I mean, Spencer brought her down, rear naked choke, got the tap, got the victory. But Anderson's still a name that I think fans do know, and her name can be rehabilitated with some victories over lower level featherweights. So my kind of takeaway here is, one, book Spencer Cyborg, get Cyborg signed, because the UFC has so many fighters people don't really care about or know about. Cyborg is a name that resonates, and even if she commands a pricey penny, I think the name value is worth it alone. So book Spencer versus Cyborg, and I actually think this is a positive just because it adds one more notable name to a division that desperately needs, like, I don't know, a dozen more.
Exactly. Needs multiple fighters. What's next up on your list of the top takeaways?
I tell you what, Ian Heinisch is scrappy as hell. In the co-main event against Antonio Carlos Jr., Heinisch, when I look at him at middleweight, I don't see a middleweight champion for sure, but I see a guy who's scrappy. I mean, we know what Carlos Jr. does well. On the ground, he's great. And in that fight, especially round three, I thought Heinisch performed well. So Ian Heinisch, a name at middleweight, who I just look at him fight, and I think he's the type of fighter that performs to the talent level of his opponent. He's really, really interesting in those scrambles. So he's a name I took away, as he's just simply scrappy as hell.
Yeah, he was number five on my list, and you know, I said it when I did my show with Pete Rogers Jr. last week when we were breaking down this fight from a DFS perspective, and I said for Ian Heinisch, it's about weathering that 5-minute storm you're going to get from Antonio Carlos Jr. And that's exactly what happened. And later on the show, you'll hear Ian kind of talk about that. He said, you know, basically kind of paraphrasing, saying, you know, hey, I was, you know, really hoping that I was going to catch him coming in and I wasn't going to have to weather that storm. But it, and he mentions, he said, you know, pretty much after those 5 minutes, he just really felt there was nothing left in the gas tank. So you got to give Ian Heinisch a lot of credit for that second and third round. So that's my number five. My number three takeaway is Aspen Ladd versus Jarre Eubanks. And I just wrote down Ladd versus Eubanks being a tremendous fight. You know, especially, man, that last like 15, 20 seconds of that fight where both girls just bite on their mouthpiece and they just start flinging. I mean, even in a loss, I don't think Eubanks lost a lot in coming up. You know, to the 135-pound division. Of course, Ladd is, you know, she's a fighter that's a big 135er as well. I mean, that was just a fun fight to watch. And for our listeners, if you haven't had a chance to watch this fight, go back on ESPN Plus and watch this fight. It was a tremendous fight.
Yeah, man, I had it written down. Like, if you're going to check out anything from the prelims, and bear in mind, there's some heavy competition. There's a nice head kick knockout from Julio Arce and a flying knee knockout from Pereira that I mentioned earlier. A couple nice submissions. The submission win by Zach Cummins, and you got an interview with him later. But if you're going to watch one thing, watch Aspen Ladd or Jarre Eubanks. It's the second time these two fighters compete against each other. And, man, I am definitely – look, I wasn't excited about a Nick Lentz-Charles Oliveira trilogy. We got that trilogy. But I am excited about Ladd Eubanks if they ever fight again, because these two, gosh, just an exciting women's 135-pound fight. They're really, really similarly skilled. Wouldn't be shocked if they meet again. A big 10-8 round by Aspen Ladd in that fight, and she certainly impressed me. So that I wouldn't put as a takeaway. I actually have three takeaways left, and I think whatever your last one is will eliminate one of those three, Jason. So I'll let you go with your takeaway, and I'll give you my two after that.
Yeah, that is Michelle Pereira. Oh my goodness. Leading up to this fight, I watched some film on this guy. And I was just like, oh, man, this guy's he's a unique striker with that capoeira. And to me, and I think I even text you this, what it is, I am as much impressed with the right hand he landed after the flying knee, because it was just pinpoint accuracy. And the fact of, and once he landed that straight right and Danny Roberts dropped to the ground, he didn't throw any additional strikes. He knew his opponent was out. And unfortunately for Danny Roberts, that highlight is going to be on the UFC highlight reel for some time.
Yeah, that definitely takes a name off my list. Michelle Pereira, dude is ripped. Dude is jacked, and he fights like it. You kind of look at his pre-UFC record. A lot of times for these debuting fighters, especially with maybe a little bit of steam, you see them go on long runs. But for Pereira, that's not the case. It's a lot of two-win streak and a loss, two wins and a loss. He must have been battle-tested, because when you watch his performance here, you just get excited about his potential. You know, Ian Heinisch don't really see a lot of potential for him, like in the top six of middleweights. But for Pereira, you could talk me into him going on a run at some point in his career. So definitely agree with you, Jason. In terms of my two takeaways, I mean, the first one is Vicente Luque is must-watch TV. The last time I think we saw him fight, he fought, Brian Barberena. Yeah. And that fight was like, oh my god, a fight of the year contender. And he comes in against Derek Krantz, and Krantz, by the way, a replacement for Neil Magny. He went for it, I tell you that much. As soon as the bell rang, he was incredibly aggressive. But Vicente Luque put him away after weathering kind of the early storm. And I just think Vicente Luque is a must-watch fighter. He's incredibly talented, but he has that nice combination of not only being talented, but just really entertaining to watch in the cage.
Yeah, just and for Luque, he did get off to a great start in that fight. Derek Krantz, a guy who took that fight on 6-7 days notice when Neil Magny was out of the fight to his issue with USADA, so you got to give him a lot of credit for stepping up on such short notice. He was going to be on the Contender Series, but got this opportunity. That's one of the things when these short notice opportunities are coming up, especially this time of year, a lot of the fighters that are getting those short notice opportunities are actually fighters going to be on the Contender Series. So when you see someone fall out late, you start looking at the Contender Series. So I've already talked about my big takeaways. So what are the other two that you have?
Oh, that was my fourth one, and my last one is Charles Oliveira. I think he's ready to make that title run. I mean, from when he first started in the UFC, it was like a sick win over Darren Elkins, a win over Efren Escudero. He was undefeated. And in those fights, he showcased so much promise. He was so smooth on the ground with his submissions. And that's obviously led to him getting, like, what, 13 submissions in the UFC. You could have projected him to eventually potentially be a champion. But he's had some pitfalls, some tough losses throughout his UFC run. But with this latest victory over Nick Lentz, and Nick Lentz is obviously a very talented fighter, because if he wasn't, trust me, he wouldn't still be in the UFC after the early running of his career of just boring fights. And he put him away, and he looked great with this stand-up. It was like, I think, the first time in the history of the world in which Charles Oliveira finished a fight via strikes. I'm sure he's got a couple before his UFC run, but it's really weird to see him go out there and finish a fight with strikes. But Oliveira has 5 consecutive victories, but none of them really stick out as being overly impressive. It's time for Charles Oliveira to once again get some big-time fights in the weight class. I think this is his run for a potential title shot.
Yeah, I mean, he's still kind of hinting at potentially trying to get at least one more fight at featherweight. It's like, no, man. He may make your run at 155 pounds. And, of course, we almost kind of had the tap there early on. And then great work by Todd Anderson in that fight with the illegal upkick. And, you know, once Nick says he's ready to go, he says, hey, do you want the position, you know, where you were, or do you want to be standing up? And it goes to the ground. But yeah, it was interesting. Also, kind of an honorable mention, Des Green getting a win in his hometown. Even mentioned about late in the third round, suffering a little bit of injury, but still going out there and getting a win. That'd be a little bit of an honorable mention. But it is a little weird. No UFC this week. It's really weird.
Dude, I couldn't believe it when I saw the rundown. And I was looking for the UFC preview section, and there wasn't one. It's unbelievable. I don't know what's going on. Maybe the UFC knows that there's a big wrestling event this weekend. You know me, I love my wrestling. It's the all Double or Nothing, All Elite Wrestling, the rival promotion to the WWE. Maybe the UFC knew that event was happening. They cleared the decks. Probably not. But yeah, it's weird. It allows us to focus on PFL this week when we do the recap next week, and also kind of take a look at some other topics.
Yeah, I think that's, and we'll talk about PFL a little bit later, but I think that, like, this is a very critical week. And when I looked at that PFL card earlier this week, my first thought was like, wow, this is a pretty nice PFL card. The prelims are going to be on ESPN2 starting at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and the main card will be on ESPN Plus starting at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But Daniel, you brought a really interesting topic to the table this week. You texted me earlier this week, and we're going to do one of those topics this week, and the other topic will be next week. The topic we're doing this week is our top 5 valuable non-UFC fighters. And when I was putting together my list, Daniel, I was kind of like, that term valuable could be taken in different ways. Based if you put 5 MMA people in a room, the term valuable might be different with every person.
Absolutely. It extends to other sports leagues. I mean, look at the debate we have all the time with the debate on the NBA most valuable player. You have people being like, it should be LeBron James every year. People say it's about how valuable you are to your team. So the word valuable is open-ended. Kind of the way I attacked this exercise was, if I have a promotion, which fighter do I want on my roster for business and for their talent level? Because the business has to continue with them winning fights. They can afford to lose a couple, but as big a name as Tito Ortiz may be, he isn't too valuable, because every time he goes out there, it could be an ugly sight. So I kind of interpret it as a mixture of name value and their potential to have name value in the future with the correct promoting, as well as talent level. Kind of how did you take that valuable?
Yeah, I was kind of – I was looking at who they are as fighters now and what they potentially could be. So, you know, when you're talking about non-UFC fighters, you know, I'm looking at Bellator. I'm looking at Ryzen, ONE Championship, PFL. And I ultimately had a ONE Championship fighter. I had 2 Bellator fighters. I've got a Ryzen fighter, and I've got a PFL fighter.
I did not write down what promotions. Let me look. I have 2 ONE FC fighters, a PFL fighter and two Bellator fighters.
I'm going to guarantee we both have the same PFL fighter.
You're right. We both have Nathan Schultz.
I will say this. So, obviously, we're talking about Kayla Harrison. And when I was putting my list together, she is the very first name I wrote down because I'm like, she's got to be in my list. I put her at number three. But I think there's a case in talking long term that she could be number one.
I have her at number one because the thing with Kayla Harrison is like, all right, you look at the history of women's MMA and popularity. It's these divisions that are literally built around one fighter. There was a point in time when it was built around Gina Carano, Cyborg, Ronda Rousey. Mm-hmm. You kind of sell the mythology of who they are, the Olympian, etc. You get people excited, and Kayla Harrison is on that trajectory. We're kind of selling the mythology of Kayla Harrison, and she to me looks so valuable in terms of like I could build a card around her. Every time she fights, people talk about her. Her talent level seems incredibly high. She looked real impressive with the win over Larissa Pacheco. She's going to be a bigger fighter than any fighter who's at her talent level. And that's why I would actually put her at number one, Jason. I could sell her as my own Ronda Rousey. I know that's saying a lot. Ronda Rousey is a one-of-a-kind talent. But I do think Kayla Harrison is someone that is just incredibly valuable.
I was watching Luke Thomas's interview with Ali Abdelaziz this week, and when they were talking about Kayla Harrison, I really liked what Luke and Ali both said is when you look at her fight 2 weeks ago, it was a dominating performance by her. But then you saw how emotional she was after the fight and kind of upset with herself. And Ali said that he told her, said, look, this is a great thing to happen for you. You just went three rounds and you're getting a lot of cage work. And Ali said, he's like, look, it goes back to her judo days. She's trying to get in and out and get the most points as possible. But you look at her and I think it's a very safe, assumption to say she could go down as the greatest women's fighter. I mean, I was thinking about this right now. Like, I think everyone, when you say greatest woman's fighter, I still think everyone would say Cyborg. But man, it's kind of hard not to say Amanda Nunes.
Yeah, I think Amanda Nunes, I think it's hard to not say that after she beat Cyborg, yeah. Right? It's like when you compare LeBron and Michael Jordan, they didn't play each other. Nunes played Cyborg, yeah. And by God, that was a hell of a victory. So I would say Nunes, but it also kind of shows you that, like, even though she's the best fighter of all time, I think the name value disparity between her and even someone like Cyborg is pretty big.
Yeah.
Which is just like fault of the promoter or what that hasn't transpired. But for Kayla, I think her advantages, I think it's going to be a lot easier for her to be marketable. It almost feels like she gets more traction today than Amanda Nunes does in terms of online articles, etc.
Well, I mean, she is the face of the PFL. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And look, when she's fighting, I'm going to tune in, and and we're probably going to see her versus Sarah Kaufman in the finals potentially at the end of this year, and that's really going to tell us a lot. So you mentioned Kayla Harrison's your number one. She was actually number three on my list. My number one, Demetrius Johnson.
Oh yeah, dude, that's my number two. That's my number two. I mean, how can you not? Because when you look at the landscape of all the fighters available that aren't in the UFC, and you ask yourself one simple question, who's the best pound-for-pound fighter available? It's Demetrius Johnson, and it's not close.
Yeah, I mean, it's just he is a guy that he's greatness. Even though he had that loss to Henry Cejudo, he's still one of the greatest fighters we've seen. And he is a guy that will get me to a computer or television set to watch him, even if he's fighting at 8 o'clock in the morning. He's a guy that is sitting there. I will tell you, it's interesting you talk about great fighters. My number two fighter, if I was starting MMA promotion and I needed to sign somebody and I thought somebody that could potentially get people's eyeballs, Gegard Mousasi.
I'm glad you put him on the list because he's not on mine, but he's definitely like. I had about 10 names that didn't make the list that I really thought about. So Gegard isn't on mine. The reason why I didn't put him is because I didn't know – like, he's been a known commodity in the sport for a long time, and it doesn't seem like his name resonates at the greatest level, but he's so talented. You look at his fight against McDonald. Kind of what sold you on Musasi putting him at three?
It's just kind of the overall resume from early on to his career to what we saw, Strikeforce, UFC, now in Bellator. I think what will hurt him is the fact of who is he going to fight defending the 185-pound title in Bellator. I kind of feel like ultimately we're probably going to see him versus Ryan Bader for the 205-pound title in Bellator. But you just look at, you know, the fact of you put Gegard Mousasi against any 85 or 205er in Bellator, most likely you're going to pick Gegard Mousasi.
Yeah, you're right. I totally agree with you, and I understand that. And if you're running an MMA promotion, you want to have the best guys available. And if we're continuing that exercise of pound-for-pound rankings, I mean, Mousasi might be two. Mm-hmm. Like, it might be Demetrius Johnson, Mousasi. And I think Ryan Bader is like – that's a top three. Is there a name? I mean, Patricio Pitbull too, obviously. I guess those would be the guys I would look at. And I certainly understand why Mousasi is so valuable.
Who's your number three?
Oh, man. All right. I'm taking a big swing here. This is a big risk because he's coming off of a loss. I have two fighters that are coming off of a loss, by the way. I'm going Bellator. I'm going Aaron Pico. Okay, I'm buying low on his stock right now, but the thing with Aaron Pico is the potential. Like, if I get him under my roster, the potential is immense.
Yeah,
I know he's changed camps roughly 47 times in the past 2 years. That's always a concern.
Yeah,
but you watch and you listen, you read, and I'm still willing to take a risk on putting Aaron Pico on my list. The possible upside is honestly bigger than anybody else that's a non-UFC fighter.
Yeah, he's not in my top five, but yeah, I'm definitely feeling what you're throwing down there. I mean, you look at the ceiling for Aaron Pico. I mean, this is a guy that you talk about pressure coming into mixed martial arts when you're labeled the greatest prospect to come into MMA. He's up there, and now he's at Jackson Wink, and it'll be interesting to see if his style of fighting changes. But once again, this is a guy that he is not taking the easy route at all. I mean, it's amazing to me about that, especially after the last loss. I thought that, you know, maybe he would get a little bit of a step down in competition, but, you know, that's not the case. He's now taking on Adam Borax, who's undefeated. That's going to be at Bellator on June the 14th. So yeah, it's that's an interesting one there. My number four, knowing how much of a hipster you are, I think number four might be on your list too.
Oh, do you have Javier Ayala?
No.
Koji
Horiguchi.
Oh, dude, that's a great one. He's my number one runner up. Wow, damn. You got the hipster glasses on. You got – I'm pretty sure you're wearing Crocs. I think that's a hipster thing to do. Kyoji Horiguchi, I love it, Jason. Just coming off that win over Darian Caldwell, one of the top lighter weight fighters in the whole world, I love it.
I mean, you look at the run that he has been on since exiting the UFC back in 2016. I mean, you even talk about – even after that loss to DJ, he went out there, he got wins against Chico Camus, Neil Siri, and Ali Bogatinov, and then he signs with Ryzen, and he has been on an absolute roll. I mean, you have to mention he's got the win against Ian McCall, Darian Caldwell, you know, Ben Wynn. He's coming off that win last month, and now he's got Darian Caldwell again, which Scott Coker has come out and said that If Koji Horiguchi wins that, part of this deal is the fact that he will have to defend the Bellator bantamweight title at least once a year. I mean, you know, once again, Koji Horiguchi, you talk about fighters that get you to the television set. For me, he's a guy that you tell me, you know, I got to get up by 6 o'clock in the morning to watch Koji Horiguchi fight, I'm going to do it.
I totally agree with you, Jason. I think that's a hell of a pick. I think in terms of, like, talent level, your roster is a lot more impressive than mine. Like, I'm going for the name value and the potential upside. And I'm kind of being biased because, like, I feel like even though I have – I guess all my fighters are lighter weight fighters. But with Horiguchi, I was kind of thinking the fact that he's a lower weight class fighter, not from America, I kind of docked him a little bit. But I'm starting to look at your roster. I'm getting a little jealous.
So who's your number four?
All right, back to Bellator, another female fighter, and I think it's obvious, Lima Leigh McFarlane. A great personality, heck of a talent. Bellator is building around her. She's a fighter that's valuable outside of the cage. You can put her in the broadcast booth, and she'll do great. So for Lima Leigh McFarlane, I just look at her. I mean, from the moment she made her entrance in that fight in Hawaii, I just thought superstar. Mm-hmm. And that's why Lima Leigh is my number four.
She's my number five.
Oh, there we go. Some synergy, Jason. I like it.
I mean, when you think about fighters that have the ability to bring different eyeballs to the television set, to me, Lima McFarlane is. And she's a fighter that I've had a chance to interview countless times. And, I always feel like I learn something more about Lima every time, that I do talk to her. Of course, the last time I talked to her, talked about the spelling of her last name and not capitalizing the F. So she's there. I mean, I think it's also kind of like what I mentioned about Gegard Mousasi. I think the issue with her, and even though she told me she doesn't care about ranking, she doesn't care where she's ranked, is how does Bellator match her to kind of continue this rise? Because I think if she's promoted the right way, she has a chance to be a major superstar.
Yeah, I do too, man. She just gets it. She gets the presentation of the sport, and that's something that's so rare. With fighters, they're primarily focused about what truly matters, which is just getting the win inside the cage. But Lima Leigh is just one of those fighters that, again, you build a promotion around, and it's a similar problem that Kayla Harrison has, where the competition may not be there, but that at least makes you confident that every time she fights, she's likely to get a victory.
Yeah. So, we gone through all your five, or you got one more?
I have my five, and before we go into it, I have a fighter who's coming off a loss, and I feel like this is a nice pivot point for us to quickly talk about a fighter who's coming off a loss who's not on either of our list. But my question to you, Jason, is if Sage Northcutt did not get knocked the hell out by Cosmo Alexander at the 1FC card this past weekend, which, oh my God, I think he fractured his skull, right?
Yeah.
Would he have been considered on your list? He is a name. He's a name. And he left his UFC run with victories. Obviously, the talent level isn't there. But Sage Northcutt is just a name that is like a mainstream name.
He would be a name I would consider on the topic we're going to talk next week.
Yeah, I certainly understand that.
And what that topic's going to be next week is if we're starting a promotion to rival the UFC, which five available fighters would we want to sign? And I think, you know, Sage... he's got the look. He's got a fighting style you like. You know, I wonder with that matchmaking that one did, was one setting him up to lose? I mean, that wasn't stylistically a great fight for him. When you're talking about Cosmo Alexander being the elite striker that he is, I mean, that to me is kind of the question mark I had with that matchmaking. But, no, you're right. I mean, if you matchmake Sage the right way, he's got an opportunity to become something because, I mean, look, he's got the look. He's got the fighting style. You just wonder with him, will the skills evolve to be an elite fighter?
Yeah, and I think it's a tough question because I think he might not. That might not happen. It's going to be a long, long, long recovery coming off this fight. But my number five is Eddie Alvarez, Jason. He's coming off just an awful loss in his 1FC debut. But I still find him incredibly valuable in terms of across the landscape. I think the Eddie Alvarez name means more than Horiguchi or Ryan Bader or Mousasi or Machida or Rory McDonald or Patricio Pitbull or even Michael Chandler. or even Lance Palmer. So for me, Eddie Alvarez, who has been in the cage with Conor McGregor, I still think is incredibly valuable. Obviously, it's a big risk putting him on the list because sometimes when we see the fighters exit the UFC spotlight, mm-hmm. they just crumble. And obviously with that last performance, he could definitely be on that downward trajectory.
I'll give you a name that was in my consideration that you have not mentioned.
Can I try and spoil it?
Sure, go ahead.
AJ McKee.
He'll be on the list next week. No, when you think about valuable non-UFC fighters.
Oh, are you thinking Fedor?
Yes. I mean, yes, he's old. Yeah, he is past his prime. But you're still – I mean, like, if Bellator said Fedor is fighting next weekend, you know what you're doing next weekend.
I'm going to watch it 100%. 100%. 100%.
I mean, you think about, like, if you sat there and said, who are the five fighters that would draw you to a television set, Fedor's got to be one of those five, even though he's past his prime, he's not what he once was, but it's still that nostalgia of Fedor Emelianenko.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's definitely at the top of the list among the nostalgia guys. Like, obviously, there's Rampage Jackson, Tito, I mean, just look at the Bellator roster. You'll find him. But Fedor absolutely is there. And so we'll see you next week. We could talk about it off the air. But I think to spice it up next week, Jason, I think the way we should do it is we should do a draft. I just think that's the best way to do it. Because I feel like I kind of crossed streams this week with my list. So I feel like the best way to do it is just to make it competitive. And we draft rosters.
I like that idea. Yeah. I think it'd be who's going to reach for AJ McKee? Who's going to reach for Aaron Pico? Kayla Harrison?
Yeah. And we'll let the viewers decide who drafts the best roster. And if you're listening and we missed a name that you think should have been on there, please reach out to us and tweet it, and we'll mention it next week.
Most definitely. But, of course, this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast is presented by Roman. Of course, we've been telling you about Roman for a couple of months now. Of course, guys, we know we are terrible at taking care of our health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys, usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. Look, I'm as guilty about it myself. Well, last week, it hurt my back really bad. Basically, sat on the couch, sat on the heating pad all day. The last thing I want to do is go see a doctor, and of course, I definitely did not go do that. But the same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online.
With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free two-day shipping. Free two-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. With Roman, it's easy to connect with the doctor.
Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And, of course, we appreciate their support here of the MMA Report. Of course, another great way to support our podcast as well is to rate and review the show. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher is great ways to do that. We've got another five-star review on Apple. Really do appreciate that. As always, appreciate the support of this podcast. But right now, it is time for the interview portion of the podcast. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Ian Heinisch coming off that win in the co-main event of UFC Rochester. Then you'll hear my conversation with Zach Cummins. Of course, got that third-round submission win there at UFC Rochester. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Walt Harris. A little note on this interview is actually recorded by a day before his fight with Alexei Olenek happened. But we did talk about Alexei Olenek in this interview. And then, of course, the final interview is going to be with Tarion Ware, who fights this week on UFC Fight Fight Pass will be in the co-main event of CFFC 75. Had a great conversation with him, and one of the most interesting parts about that conversation with Taryn Ware was the fact that he knows that his odds of getting back to the UFC are very slim. So here are my conversation with Ian Hynes, Zach Cummings, Walt Harris, and Taryn Ware.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report as the man is coming off a decision victory this past weekend, UFC Rochester in the co-main event. Ian Heinisch got the win over Antonio Carlos Jr. Ian, as always, appreciate the time. Obviously, first 5 minutes, you went through some adversity in those first 5 minutes. How would you describe the opening 5 minutes of the fight?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he did what he wanted to do, and I mean, he got a hold of me. He got me down pretty quick, which I was a little unexpecting, but I thought I might get in this position. He's, you know, he's one of the best in the world to do it. He wants to get my back. That's his whole goal. So I just had to weather the storm. I'm no stranger to adversity. And then once the round was over, I feel like I kind of broke him a little bit because he figured out he's not going to submit me. And what is he going to do now? And I felt like he kind of gave me his best in the first round. I weathered the storm. I was ready to go in the second.
It's what I did my preview show. The way I summed up this fight is I said, Ian's got to survive a five-minute flurry that he's going to get from Antonio Carlos Jr. Was that something you and your team had talked about leading up to this fight? Like, look, we know the storm's coming for 5 minutes, but when we get to minute six, we think that storm's going to, you know, really fade out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I was really hoping to just catch him and coming in on a shot with a switch kick, catch him right in the face or the knee or something, but you know, I mean, he's obviously one of the best in the world at avoiding strikes, coming in, getting a hold of you, pulling you to the ground, getting on the back. So once he was there, you know, I felt like I just had to be super technical. I couldn't explode and be crazy explosive like I usually am because we were dry. He is one of the best in the world at this. And so I just kind of had to be very technical, weather that storm. And yeah, I felt like after that round was over and he didn't get me, I was like, it's my turn now.
I think it was in the opening round where, like, you did, like, this somersault to try to escape out of position on the ground. Is that something you work on constantly?
I mean, yeah, if you can't – I mean, I couldn't break his grip. He had a super strong grip. I mean, you got to imagine grabbing geese for your whole life, 15, 20 years, whatever. That grip is just, you know, it's a vice grip. And, you know, as any wrestler would know, that was a Granby roll, a standing Granby roll. And I tried whipping it as hard as I could. I was very surprised he could stay latched onto my back through that. And, you know, I knew I had to just kind of, but it did make him very uncomfortable. He didn't like that. So yeah, I was throwing Granby rolls left and right. I just wanted to get off my back so we could fight.
When the scores are being read, are you pretty confident you got it in the bag?
Yeah. You know, I'm pretty confident that it was my fight. You know, I definitely knew I lost that first round, but you never know, man, when you're in a fight, you don't really know how you look. Like, you always look better than you think you do in my case. And you just, you know, it's kind of a blur in there, to be honest, a little bit. Like, you remember the walkout a lot more than you remember the fight. So, yeah, I was positive. I looked over at Paul Felder, though. I was like, it's me? And he was like, oh, yeah. And I was like, all right, cool.
You know, you mentioned about the walkout. And it was telling me that your walkout song, The Hurricane by Bob Dylan, is picked for many reasons. Is there any particular reason that you kind of want to, you know, share to the listeners out there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, my nickname kind of comes from Reuben Carter, amazing boxer, you know, a world champ. And, you know, he did 2 years in prison. He came out and became a world champ. Obviously, he faced a lot more adversity in his life, dealing with a murder charge and everything. But I take a lot of inspiration from that, you know, getting locked up and just turning your body into a weapon in prison. That's all you think about. You eat, sleep, and breathe that. You know, you're training your mind, body, and spirit every day in that prison. So when you come out, you're just an absolute weapon. And that's exactly what I did. That's what he did. And he came out and became a world champ. I believe I'm going to come out and be a world champ. I'm on my way there. And so, you know, it's very significant to me. And it kind of brings me back. I mean, in the song, I get super hyped. He's like, you know, he's going to come out of prison and be the champion of the world. And I believe that's my story too. And so, yeah, there's a lot of significance behind that, and it's Bob Dylan, and it gets me hyped.
I mean, a year ago at this time, you're preparing for the Contender Series. You've now taken on, you know, two top 15 guys. I mean, could you script this for yourself a year ago? Say, hey, I'm going to get on the Contender Series. I'm going to get in the UFC. I'm going to face two top 15 guys. I mean, would you, if someone had told you that story, would you go, would you believe it?
Absolutely. You know, I've always believed I'm going to be on the fast track to get that belt. And, you I have God's blessing. I definitely have a vision of where I want to be in the journey. And if I get so fixated on just have those expectations in your head, you're going to be let down. So I'm just kind of really enjoying this ride. So I'm just kind of sitting back and just taking it all in. And just how things have worked out has just been amazing. I mean, with Tom Breeze pulling out, I was on the prelims in London, and now I'm all of a sudden bumped to co-main event in Rochester.
And of course, we mentioned about what happened. You mentioned about what happened in March. I mean, day of the event. Who's the poor person who had to tell you your fight's off for the day of the event?
Yeah. So when I was in London, I was literally taking a nap, waking up, and getting ready to shower, and then head to the venue, go to the bus, which is going to take us. And I had like 4 missed calls from my manager. So I called my manager back. He said, "Hey, Tom's out." Called Mick. Mick confirmed it. And yeah, it was a roller coaster of emotions from there.
I'm guessing your first probably thought is, "Hey, is Tom okay?" I mean, that's probably gotta be one of your first thoughts. But is it just more of just like kind of this personal frustration of like, man, I've been busting my hump here for the last couple of weeks, and now the payoff's not coming?
Yeah, you know, it was at first I was mad and I was wondering why he did. And then I kind of found out, well, I kind of assumed it was mental health because he had this issue before. I was very mad at him at first, but then I just realized, you know, this guy must have some serious demons. You know, we need to pray for this guy. He's in a dark spot pulling out of a UFC fight, the day of the fight with a family and all his friends and supporters there ready to watch him. You know, it's got to be something very severe to do that. So, you know, at the end of the day, it all worked out. And the UFC took great care of me. So, you know, like I said, I try not to make my expectations too high so I don't get let down.
For you now, I mean, obviously, you know, these two big wins you've had here in the UFC, what's kind of, is there a roadmap you have for yourself of kind of what you want next and maybe a timetable?
Yeah, you know, me and my team have discussed it, me and my manager, and, you know, we think Brunson would be a great fight for the next one, or, you know, Jack Hermanson, if he wants to take that fight too. I mean, I would love to fight another great wrestler and just, you know, showcase my wrestling against his and also be able to strike a little bit more and not just have to like hold people off my legs. So, you know, I mean, we want a top 10 guy.
I mean, obviously you mentioned about Jack. I mean, he's obviously right there in terms of potentially a title matchup. Do you think he would be interested in taking a fight with you right now? Or do you kind of feel like maybe he gets a fight and I can maybe hop in a short notice opportunity and that's maybe the way you get that fight?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't know exactly the roadmap of where I'm going to go. Those are the fights I would like, but anyone in the top 10 would do. I just want to keep advancing myself, keep climbing the ranks, and my goal is to be top 5 by the end of this year.
You know, and so how do you celebrate this victory? I mean, for yourself, I mean, is it just kind of being around friends and family?
You know, it's about being around friends and family, but then also I need some time for myself. So I'm in the process of booking a trip either to Mexico or the Bahamas or Aruba. And just get away for a little while, get that reset button going and be fired up to come back and train.
Is that something you kind of always do, you know, try to find, you know, some little trip after a fight? And are there locations somewhere you've gone before that you just had a good time?
Yeah, I usually go to Mexico a lot just because it's so easy to get there and convenient. I love the beach. I love clear water. I love doing things outside. I need mountains or the beach. So I live in the mountains and, you know, it's going to be a holiday weekend the next week, so I'll be really busy. But yeah, I think I'm going to get away to the beach this time and just kind of hit that reset button.
Yeah, me living in Ford, I could kind of just take a 20-minute drive
yeah,
up right
you
there.
Know that. Yep.
Yeah, and being involved in a restaurant on the beach also helps a lot out too. So
I
definitely get that. But Ian, man, I really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Of course, let everyone know everything, find you on social media, and of course, those sponsors that have helped you out.
Look for me, Ian Heinisch MMA, Instagram and Twitter. Ian the Hurricane Heinisch on Facebook, and then just want to thank my coaches, Mark Montoya, Professor Busy, everyone at Factory X, all my teammates, and then my manager, Jason House, and Landau Performance for my strength conditioning. And then, yeah, so just want to give a shout out to all my sponsors and fans and everyone in New York who came out to support. That was an amazing time, and I'll see you guys soon. Stay tuned for huge news.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man scored a victory this past weekend, UFC Rochester. It's Zach Cummings, got the submission victory in the third round. Zach, I appreciate the time. First round, you know, obviously, you know, you mentioned about, you know, hey, this guy's got power and speed. You know, he busts you up a little bit there in the eye, and even the broadcasters kind of noticed and said, hey, is this going to become something that could bother Zach as the fight went on? Did that cut have any effect on kind of, you know, how you fought, you know, Trevin in the second and third round?
No, I mean, honestly, the punch barely touched me. Just one of those that I felt just grazed me, and then all of a sudden I saw, you know, little blood droplets coming down. I was like, oh, well, hell, I guess it cut me. I mean, I guess, yeah, I couldn't tell how bad it was. In the corner, they said, you know, it wasn't real bad, but it was definitely bleeding. But I didn't know if it was like, you know, a chance to get stopped or not. I wasn't really sure how the cut was, but it didn't really affect me in the fight. It's not like he hit me that hard. I'm really was kind of surprised after the fight with my eye was so black. He must have caught me with something solid that I don't really remember. But yeah, for the cut though, it was I was nervous that if it could open it up, you know, right above the eye, that I mean, you know, a doctor could stop it. But for the most part, it didn't really affect me in the fight.
What was his speed a surprise to you in terms of what you saw on film in comparison to when the punches started coming your way?
Speed, no. His range was what I thought was really good. I was expecting him to have very fast hands, and really, I felt like I saw him very, very well. I felt like I saw the jab coming. I mean, I straight up caught it in the first round, but I felt most of his offense. I could just see it a mile away. I was having a hard time of getting close enough to land my own offense. I wasn't really too nervous about what he had. I could see it. I felt like I could see all of his setups, all of his offense, plain as day. He was doing a really good job of keeping his range outside of like my danger zone. You know, so he was coming and using his speed coming in. I saw it coming. You know, a couple little things were landing. But eventually I was almost just making the decision of, hey, man, like, I'm not to let him come in, like, try to give him something little so he can come in, try to land some so I can, so you, you know, put my hands on him. But, and eventually, you know, it kind of worked out for me. But, yeah, his range was really, really good.
And after the second round over, the broadcast team, while it didn't get on the broadcast, they noted that your corner was pretty adamant about, hey, man, you got to go out there, you got to get this round. What was your mindset heading into the third round? Was it a mindset of I got to stop him, or is it a mindset, look, I just need to, you know, control him, you know, walk away with here with a 29-28 decision?
That's never my mindset. I'm ever in my mindset of a hey, let's just win this round, let's make sure we get this decision. I'm a finisher. I fight to finish no matter what. I don't care if I'm up, you know, murdering it on the scorecards, or if I'm down. I'm looking for the finish at all times, but it's still a calculated, you know, view. I'm always trying to be calculated whenever in the decisions that I make, but I'm always looking for the finish. I'm always looking for the big shot to hurt him, or, you know, try to back him up to where I could take him down. And I was definitely felt like I was going to start looking for more submissions in that round. I thought I was going to try to back him down a little bit to the fence and then take him down and go from there. But the punch I was trying to back him down with went ahead and dropped him, so it worked. But we knew the scorecards were close. We were pretty comfortable that we were winning, but you never know what these judges are looking for. Especially the way I came out in the third round, I felt like I was winning it. It felt like I at least would have got one of the first rounds. And obviously after hearing the scorecards, if it went to decision, I was going to win anyways. But yeah, it was just one of those where I'm always fighting to finish. I hate going to score to the judges and listen to the scoring anyways. So I've got the finishing mindset always.
Is there something about the fight you're most proud of what you did on Saturday night?
Anytime you can step up and finish an undefeated fighter, it's a big deal. I mean, you know, guys are undefeated for a reason, and there's guys that are they always have that kind of false sense of confidence that they're just unbeatable, you know, and those guys are the ones, they don't quit. Like they always have that, the extra gear. They feel like they can go in, and if you catch them in something good, like they're not going to quit. They're not going to give up. And, you know, so, I mean, I felt like I was going to be able to use my experience and me being the vet to go out there and beat him and win the fight. I didn't know if I'd be able to kind of break him and make him quit. And he did. And that's, you know, so him tapping out, it's probably the most thing I was proud of. It's always great going out and taking that zero from an undefeated guy, but not only doing it, but a finish. It always feels a little bit better.
And obviously it's a great night for you personally, but overall a pretty good night for your team there at Glory with what you're able to do. I mean, obviously, unfortunately for Megan, she wasn't able to get the win. But, you know, for you, just you know, from a team aspect, I mean, what kind of what's that locker room like, you know, after the night is over? I mean, I know I was told you're a huge sushi fan. So was sushi a part of the celebration?
No, that will be – well, I had some yesterday at the airport, but no, it was everybody's different, you know. We're a big team, but everybody's so much different. You know, there's some people that just kind of want to be stuck, you know, by themselves. Some drink, some don't. I mean, we were all hanging out in the hotel lobby together for the most part. You know, Grant looked phenomenal. I knew that I thought he had a tough fight with Trezano, but I knew that Mike was gonna have a really tough time with Grant's pressure. And man, he looked good. He just put the pressure on, kept, getting the takedowns, land, you know, he was getting hit with some jabs, but just kept coming forward, put the pressure on, getting the takedowns, and finally just, you know, worked through the back and set his submission in. He looked great. And then, Megan's put in a tough spot, man. She has all these people, you know, looking up to her, supporting her, that put all this pressure on her shoulders. And they don't really forget that, like, these other girls are also very, very good. I mean, she's fighting a jiu-jitsu black belt with Felicia. And, I mean, girl had a good game plan. She got inside, which is really hard to do, was able to get a takedown and get to Megan's back. I mean, that one hurts because I know how good Megan really is, and I know what she's capable of. And a lot of people live and – the sad part is, man, this internet is just filled with savages, and you know, people don't care that they're people and stuff. And I mean, they could say whatever to me, and I just really don't care that much. It's kind of fun and games to me, but someone who's as emotional as Megan, like, it really kind of hurts my feelings that she has to deal with that more than most people, than pretty much every guy. So it's sad, but it's part of the game, part of the sport. I mean, she signed up for it. It's all part of it, but. She'll be back. She's very, very good. She's a very talented fighter, and you know, she'll have her moment. I know it will. And then Ian Heinich from my teammate from Factor X stepped up and had a hell of a fight with Antonio Carlos Jr. And man, just had some adversity at the first round. Had his back almost the whole round, but you know, we knew he was going to be there. He practiced and just kept fighting. And then you know, rounds two and three just. Kept putting the pressure on and kept just breaking Antonio down over and over and over, and just went out and got a nice gritty win. So overall for the night, I mean, we were really, really happy. But I mean, when one goes down, we all go down. I mean, it was a great night, but it's still always sad for Megan too. But it's pretty cool seeing that many teammates from the Midwest all together, you know, on a card over by in New York. So it was a fun experience.
And this now marks back-to-back wins for you, 4-5. We've now seen you move up to 85. Is 85 the permanent home? And kind of have you put 170 to bed? Like, not going to attempt to go down to 170 anymore?
Yeah, I don't even know how I made it. It's stupid. I don't know. I'm just a thick kid. I mean, like, I know I'm not shredded out with abs on top of abs like some of these other guys, but it's just my body type is just not that way. I'm thick. I'm just a very thick guy. I mean, like, I got big legs, butt, everything. So it was really hard for me to make the weight, and I feel like I have a lot more of my full potential being able to fight when I'm in the cage on fight night, you know, not dealing with the massive weight cut. So I'm definitely going to stay at 85 for the rest of my career, and I feel good there, and I definitely think we're close to done yet.
And obviously, you want to get your body ready to go for getting right back into a camp. But is there a target range for you of when you would like your next fight to be?
Nothing yet. I mean, I got these stitches that last probably a week or so. So, I mean, I feel good. My body's in good shape. I need to, just rest a couple bumps and bruises. But, I mean, I'll be right back in the gym. I'll be there in a few hours coaching and teaching and kind of going through the motions there. But... I don't know. I gotta sit down, talk to my family, talk to my wife, talk to my management, just kind of see what the next move's going to be. you know, see who maybe we can ask for, or what type of opponent we should look at, or got to look at the dates and everything. I know on the home life side of things, my wife has some stuff planned this summer already with her work. So I just got to figure out what makes sense. You know, I mean, now I got the family, got the little one, a lot more than just me. So we just got to, we'll get together as a family, and then we'll talk to management guys, and we'll figure it out. But it won't be too long. I mean, I want to stay pretty consistent. I feel sharp, and I just want to keep that going. So we'll look at the dates, and we'll try to get something going.
And we'll just have to wait and see when that is. Zach, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you on social media, and of course, those sponsors that have been supporting you.
I mean, follow me at Zach Cummings, pretty much across the board. I mean, sponsors, come at me. I need some. I don't have very many right now. So, yeah, this would be a great spot for you. So if you're interested, hit me up. No, I've got, you know, Iridium Sports, agency with my management. Joe Wooster is my main agent. You know, I got my family, everybody at Glory MMA and Fitness, Factory X Muay Thai in Denver. I have a massive support group, and it just feels so awesome that whenever we all kind of come together and get the victory, you know, it's not just me, it's a huge group of people in there. So it's very, very happy I could do all the proud.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, it's coming off a 52nd win at UFC Ottawa. It is Walt Harris. Walt, man, I appreciate the time. I thought it was interesting. You talked about, you know, going that last fight after you won. You felt kind of this chip off your shoulder. Was it a bunch of things all kind of piled into one, or was there one certain thing of why you kind of felt there was this big chip?
It's a couple different things. I mean, not getting the Alexei fight. That I was working so hard for, and that I've been working so hard for so many years. The fact that I was facing a newcomer that was relatively unknown, you know, after going to having the chance to fight the number 8 guy and being in the top 10. So, yeah, I felt like, you know, it wasn't like I felt like I was being disrespected, but I felt like I had a lot to prove. I had a lot to prove to myself. And, you know, just to go in there and do it, to have it finished the way it did, man, it was perfect.
Did you at all kind of feel like I'm really in a lose-lose situation here? I mean, yeah, I'll get the win, but it doesn't really elevate me in terms of the rankings.
I really don't look at it that way. I mean, I feel like with the UFC as a whole in the heavyweight division, I feel like winning and staying in that W column is always the most important thing. Yeah, the rankings, the number beside your name looks good, but if I'm on a 4-5, 5-5 win streak, then my leverage goes up. You know what I mean? So I just, you know, I go in there with the mindset of just going there and perform and do well and, you know, let the chips fall where they may.
I know after you got the win, they showed the family in the crowd. They came up to support you in Ottawa. Do you remember anything that your family said to you after the victory of what they kind of thought about the performance?
My mom was like, over the moon, man. She was so ecstatic, and everybody started calling their phone. We saw you on TV, you know. So that was kind of a good thing for her. And then she got a little shout out afterwards. And I thought back, I'm like, man, I've been in UFC for a while, and I don't think I've ever shouted my mom out, you know. And so I was like, after I get this win, I'm definitely gonna remember to do that. And so she was just so happy, man. She couldn't have been more happy.
Did you know anything that the production crew knew where your family was sitting?
I didn't have a clue, man. I know they took care of the tickets for my mom or whatever, but I had no idea where they were even sitting at. I was looking for them, actually. Like, I was walking around the cage trying to find my mom because I wanted to jump up on the cage and tell her I love her, but I couldn't find her. I was like, whatever, I'm just going to jump up right here and, you know, get the fans all riled up.
As you go back and you think about that performance, I mean, obviously it didn't take you long to go out there and get the win. Is there something about the fight that sticks out to you that you're the most proud of?
Just my focus. I think my headspace right now is exactly where I need to be as far as, you know, competing at the highest level. I was just locked in. You know, I just felt like there was no way I was going to come out with an L from that fight. No matter how long it went, no matter what went on in it, I was determined to win. And I think that the way I've been training and mental training and, you know, where I'm at in my life right now, that's the space I'm in. You know, no matter what happens next, I'm prepared, you know, so.
I know you talked about that the last time we talked about just kind of mentally where you're at now and how much of a better place you are. And I think a lot of people don't kind of understand what that means for you about being in a better place and obviously being back in Alabama. I mean, is it just kind of, would you say maybe you're more at peace now?
Oh, for sure. Definitely more peace. You know, definitely a confidence in my training and in my preparation that I know for a fact when I step in there, I'm 110% ready. You know, it's just a good thing, man. And I know from being like a big Michael Jordan fan, he would always say that the game is 90% mental and 10% physical. And I think that's so right. You know what I mean? If you're in the right headspace going into a fight, man, you feel like you can conquer the world. And that's just kind of where I'm at right now. Prepare for all comers.
We heard you in the post-fight interview. You mentioned about Justin Willis as potential name. Even though he is coming off that loss, Alexio Linick, is that a guy that's still on the radar?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's definitely a fight that I want. I want back. I want to go ahead and, you know, whichever direction the UFC wants me to go, I'm always down to go. But, you know, if Justin Willis comes down the pipe first, I'm going to be chomping at the bit to get that one. Like, I've never had disdain for anybody that I fought ever in my whole career. But this guy is different. I got a different edge going into this one. So,
what is it with him of why it's brought this out of you?
Well, it's just one of those things, man. Like when you interact with people, you get a vibe. You know, I'm a big vibe guy, energy guy, and there was a kind of about a year and a half ago, there was comments he made on via Instagram that I didn't like. You know, it was just the way he rubbed me the wrong way, and he said some things that I keep in the back of my mind. I'm like, you know, and then I think he just thinks he's better than he actually is. You know what I mean? He hasn't done enough to be the way he is. You know what I mean? And so I wouldn't mind getting a chance to chop him down.
Now, are we talking like, was it he commenting something about you, like on a post you did or?
Yeah. So it was just, I asked him if he wanted to fight, like respectfully. I didn't talk trash. It was just one of those things. I didn't have a fight. He didn't have a fight. And everybody's like tagging me and him in these different posts, like all over the internet. So I finally responded one day. I'm like, man, I need to fight. I was like, what's up? You know, you down? And then he made some type of comment, very arrogant comment about, you know, he's on the bigger and better thing, something like that, you know? And I'm just like, dude, you just got in the UFC. You know what I mean? I've been here for 5 years and you're talking to me like I'm, you know, a nobody basically, and it rubbed me the wrong way. And then he even made a statement about something he would finish me or something like that. It was very, very disrespectful, I felt. So we're gonna have our chance to dance soon, I hope.
Like, do I feel like if this fight comes together, Chris Conley's gonna put up that Instagram post somewhere in the gym to keep you a reminder every day?
Oh, it is definitely it's fuel, man. It's big time fuel. You know, I just, like I said, I've never had disdain or anything for anybody that I've fought against. And this guy, I've always motivated when I'm training and when I'm in camp. And this, I might come into this fight the lowest I've ever weighed in, the best shape of my entire life, because I'm trying to hurt this dude. Like, I really am trying to hurt him. And I don't think about fighting in that way. I don't think, oh, I want to go in here and just hurt this guy as bad as I possibly can. I want to hurt this man. You know what I mean? Like, I physically want to maim him. And so that's where my mind is, you know. And when I'm there and I'm in that mind frame and training, that's a bad proposition for anybody, I feel.
I guess the other side of it, some people may look at that and say, could that make you an emotional fighter and cause mistakes?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, I don't think that'll be a problem. I mean, I've had so much more pressure on me in fights to be emotional, you know, carrying what you think, you know, chips or whatever, but I use chips as motivation. I've been an athlete my whole life. So I feel like those kind of moments don't surprise me. I'm not going to be emotional. It's just going to be fun to punch them in the face and I'll get a thrill out of that. You know what I mean?
Is there a timetable when you want your next fight to be?
I mean, whenever. I'm preferring July. If that happens, June, I think it'll be not too soon, but you know, cause I'm still in the gym. I got in the gym that next Monday morning. So whenever they said it, I'll be ready, but I would like July. September is definitely still on my radar. And if I can get one in July and then turn around and go to Abu Dhabi in September, that'd be perfect, man.
Is fighting in Abu Dhabi kind of is it a bucket list type thing for you?
Yeah, definitely is a bucket list thing. Like I've always wanted to go over there just to travel. And so to get to go over there and do what I love and get paid to do it, you know what I mean? Like, it'd be awesome for sure.
I know Eric Anders has really talked about that, of kind of using this job as a way to tour the world. I mean, yeah, it seems like the Alabama boys is kind of a common theme.
Yeah, man. It's Bama. We're from Bama, man. So like when you get to leave and go do the cool things we've gotten to do, man, I've been to some great places because of the UFC and I'm grateful for it. So if I get a chance to do Abu Dhabi, man, that'd be like, wow, you know, he's super cool.
Is there one place that you've gone in this MMA journey for you that sticks out to you of like, man, if I ever get a chance, I'd love to go back to that place again?
Oh, Singapore, without a doubt. Singapore is one, and then Australia. I'm definitely going back to both of those places at some point in my life.
Definitely. Yeah, I've heard people say about Australia, man, that plane flight, though. Oh, it's a long plane flight.
It's ridiculous, but it's worth it. Once you get there, it's like, wow. Like, it's so cool, man. I love that place. And then Singapore was just everything I didn't expect. Like, I honestly didn't have any idea about Singapore. I thought it was like third world. Like, you know, this place is like the most technologically advanced place in the world, man. It's unbelievable. And the people over there are amazing as well.
Are you a tech guy? Like, do you have to have all the new gadgets?
Yeah, bro. I got everything, man. I got all the new TVs, gaming systems. I'm bad about tech, man. It's my thing. If I had one vice that I have to be honest about, it's tech. Like, I just bought a new TV the other day for absolutely no reason.
I'm the same way. My wife would call me Mr. Upgrade. Some new technology comes out. Oh, I gotta go get it.
So check this. The next time we talk, I'm gonna talk to you from my studio. I have an actual like studio. I have a mic like that. You have
okay.
I've got the soundproof. I've got the monitors. It's crazy, man. And I did it on a humbug. Like, I was just like, all right, I want this stuff, so I went and got it. And I've done one Skype interview on it, and it was pretty cool. But I was like, man, this
all right. Is, yeah. Now, like, are you like trying to get in the broadcasting? You trying to? You thinking about life after fighting?
Yeah, for sure. I talked to Paul Felder actually after my fight, and he's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, come on, you know, like, so I know a guy here in town that was a professional broadcaster. He's gonna kind of tutor me and teach me, you know, the nuances of the game. And then that's definitely a direction I'm looking to go into. I'm about to create a podcast, you know, and then I game. I'm going to stream my gaming and all that different stuff as well.
What's the go-to video game for you?
Right now, my go-to video game is PES 2019. I'm a huge soccer fan. I'm playing that right now. Call of Duty is definitely one I go to. And then there's a couple new ones that are about to come out that I'll be on for sure.
Now, are you playing online? And when people start trash talking to you, they realize they're talking to an active fighter.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Sometimes they don't know, and then they'll go look at my bio, and they're like, "Oh, you know, like I have actually the craziest thing. One of my best friends now I met online years ago, and we met in an argument. Like we argued with each other playing hockey, and then we just kind of talked, and then we just like really became good friends and. The rest is history. We've been friends for like 10 years. He even came to my fights. He's been to my like three of my fights.
Awesome.
So, you know, gaming is awesome, man. I love it.
Yeah, I wish I had time to play. I'll pop in NBA. That's about it.
Yeah, buddy. Are you live guy or 2K guy?
2K. Okay, back in the day, live was the game.
Hey, live was the game.
I remember I played the version from like 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm like, this is trash.
Yeah, it's terrible now. 2K is where it's at for sure.
Oh,
I'm
definitely
2K gone right now. I'm back on 2K playing my career real hard.
Yeah,
I created my son and everything, so we're, you know, I just broke the starting lineup. He's averaging like 19 points a game.
do you play video games with your son, and do you take it easy on him?
Oh, never. Never. In fact, I just took him to Dave and Buster's yesterday, and we played the basketball, and I would not let him win. I refused. I told him, you could be in the NBA, son, be the best player, and I'm still going to find a way to beat you. Never going to let you win.
Yeah, but you know, at some point, he's going to get as good as you shooting the
hoops. Oh, for sure. Like, his jump shot is better than mine now. Like, the kid can shoot the lights out. And just, it's fortunate that we were on like one of those low goals that I could like kind of reach in and throw. You know what I mean? He's only 12, so. But he beat me, I think, like, we played probably, like, 8 games. He beat me 3 times, I think. Like, smoked me in all 3 of them. But the other ones, I kind of edged him out by, like, 1 point, 2 points. But of course, I'm like, I won the series. That's my thing. You can win the series.
It's all about that best of seven.
That's it. Best of seven, man. If you can beat me one game, great. Can you beat me in a seven game series? So
exactly. I know we're both big NBA people. So looking forward to. I will say, last night it was kind of funny watching all the Knicks fans just
deflate.
Oh man,
Harry Helwani was the funniest to me.
Oh, like, I've seen the video. Oh that's.
Dude, he. I felt so bad for him. I was like, wow. And then New Orleans gets the number one. Like, come on now. Hey, AD and is going to be insane.
It's like I tweeted right after the fact. How quick does the Pelicans call up AD? So, you want to come back to New Orleans?
Right. Like, man, that's going to be a good team, man. If they can build around that, they'll be contending for sure in a year or two.
Yeah, but we look forward to seeing your next fight, whenever it may be. Walt, appreciate the time. And, of course, we get that podcast, let us know. We'll definitely let everyone know about it. But, of course, let everyone know to follow you out on social media. Of course, the sponsors that are helping you out.
At the Big Ticket 205 is my social media handle for everything. I just want to thank LD Recovery Shop. I'm actually at her spot right now. Thank you for all your help getting me ready. Say hey, Lauren.
Hey.
She helps me stay healthy, man. I want to thank my manager, Jason House, and everybody at Iridium. They're just incredible. But Bluebird Botanicals, CBDs, amazing. Anybody else? I can't, you know, if I missed you, I'm sorry. I always mess these things up. But you know who you are, and I appreciate you. I love you. Thank you so much. And you, bro, I love being on your show. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, steps back inside competition here at CFFC 75 is Tarion Ware. Tarion, I appreciate time. Of course, first time we've seen you since your last fight back in September. You know, obviously, no longer being in the UFC, did you find a struggle to find fights, or is it one of those things that you and your team just decided, hey, let's take a couple months off and let's kind of, you know, get some work in before getting back inside competition?
Well, I suffered an injury during that fight, so I took about 2 months off just in general. And then I was trying to get a fight like late December, early January, and I just couldn't find a fight.
Frustrating? Would that be about the best way to describe it?
Yeah, but I was used to it. It's happened to me before in my career where, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, bad timing, especially like during the holidays, guys don't seem to want to fight or whatever. They don't want to cut that weight. So I've been through it before. So while I was frustrated, I was used to it. I just used the time to work on some things I needed to work on. And now it's just time to get back to it. And I'm excited and can't wait.
One of the things that Ed had mentioned to me, and I don't know if many fighters in your position would just come out and admit this, that you understand that your odds are slim of getting back to the UFC. Why do you think that's a statement we don't hear a lot of fighters say?
Probably just don't want to admit it to themselves, really. They don't want to come to that realization and face that fact. But, I mean, it is a fact. I mean, you look at it, that's oftentimes where guys get cut. A lot of times you don't get that second chance. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, guys get cut and they, you know, it seems like their motivation goes down, or they don't really seem to care as much, or they don't put in the time. You know, I see a lot of guys like get cut from the UFC and they fight somewhere else and they miss weight and all these other things. And it's like, just doesn't seem like they're putting a lot into it. And you know, maybe it's like a loss of motivation type thing. But I mean, there are occasions where, you know, people, you know, they get motivated, and they come back. You know, one of my training partners and one of my good friends, Chris Los Giagos, he was cut from the UFC and now he's back in there. So it can definitely happen, but it doesn't happen very often.
Motivation is where we hear in the fight game all the time. And I know you just had Instagram posts or you talked about, you know, this is my ride or die. And family, obviously, very important to you, just like it is to everyone else. What would you say is your number two motivation in the fight game?
Just my love for it, man. Like, I can't, like, I just can't stop thinking about it. I mean, I was up, you know, early this morning, you know, at work, you know, my phone watching, you know, 1FC. I just love watching fights. I love competing. I love training. I just love everything about it. I want to do it for as long as I can. So, I'm a very, very competitive person. I'm down to whether it's playing video games, you know, whatever the case may be. I'm very competitive and, you know, it drives me to continue to get better and, you know, want to avenge losses and stuff like that, or just, you know, just prove to myself and others that, you know, that I can improve and I can be better, a better fighter each time I go out there.
As a fighter, you're going to watch a fight different than the common person who, you know, is sitting down with their buddies on a Saturday night watching fights. Well, and I've talked to football players about this because they just see the game differently. There's little things that they see that the common fan wouldn't see. When you're watching fight, is there something that you see that is something you never hear people talking about the fight game?
Yeah, I mean, with fighters, is, you know, we train, you know, and we train. So a lot of times when we're watching fights and we see things that are going on, maybe a fighter's in a certain position, we can revert back to, okay, when we're in training, what did coach say to do to get out of this or to maneuver and do this? Whereas, you know, most people are just kind of looking at, you know, strikes being rained down or the guy going for a submission. Whereas we're thinking about, like, what will we do in that situation? We always put ourselves in that situation and, like, what will we do? I mean, unless you're around other fighters, you really don't hear that. And, you know, if I'm around normal people, a lot of times I won't say it myself because they'll be looking at me. I have no idea what I'm talking about. And it's like talking to a brick wall. So I just kind of keep it to myself and just, you know, watch when you're watching fights. So you kind of put yourself in that position and, like, what things you would do to get out of it.
I mentioned about your Instagram. I saw you had a post where you said, wrapped up a solid camp, the best camp I've ever had. I feel great. Why would you say this is the best camp you've ever had?
Just because, you know, the last, you know, 7-8 years, I've been with the same gym. I've had the same training partners, which is not a bad thing. Being loyal is not a bad thing, but it got to the point where, you know, it gets a little stagnant. You know, you're training with the same guys, you're getting used to, you know, to their moves, things that they like to do. And you know, some of it stops being fun, stops being a challenge because, again, you learn each other's moves and it's kind of like you feel like you're kind of going through the motions a little bit. And while you improve in certain things just with experience, I didn't feel like I was learning new things. And, like, I, you know, anybody that watches MMA, you watch the last, you know, 15, 20 years of MMA, the evolution of this game is rapid, you know, more so than anything we've ever seen. And if you're staying in the same place and training and doing the same thing, you're not learning things new or experiencing anything new, you'll get left behind really, really quick. And, you know, so for me, you know, going out and going to another camp and getting around a bunch of different guys, as well as just getting it around a bunch of different guys that was in the area that I've struggled in, which has been my grappling, you know, throughout my career, it's been no secret. And I mean, just the leaps and bounds that I've made and, you know, and improving that part of my game as well as my overall game and then getting different experiences with a bunch of different bodies, a bunch of different, you know, skill sets. You know, I've just seen a growth, you know, over these last, you know, 8 to 10 weeks. And I'm excited and I'm happy to go through it and be able to go out there and show the new skills that I've improved upon.
You're fighting here with Jordan, solid record, 10-2. I think outside looking in, people could say, well, you know, obviously Jordan's looking at his potential of, hey, I'm taking on a UFC vet here. Is that part of the motivation for you of sitting here going, man, this guy thinks he's going to make a name on myself and I've got something to say to him?
Yeah, man, I mean, that's what I was hoping for, man, you know, because again, like I said, like it was hard to get fights, you know, the last, you know, couple months or whatever the case may be. And I was hoping that, you know, guys would look and go, you know, hey, let's give it, you know, let's make a name off of him, you know, so it'll be easier for me to, you know, to be active. But I mean, as far as like, I mean, that's the position that I was in a year and a half ago when I was, you know, fighting guys that, you know, like I'm looking like, hey, like, you know, can I get a, you know, former UFC fighter so I can, you know, if I can beat him, I can, you know, I can move on to a bigger show. I mean, the motivation, again, like I said, for me is just is I'm competitive no matter what. So regardless of whether he's thinking that or not, I'm going to be motivated just by the fight itself. But it is a little bit of extra motivation that, you know, if this guy thinks he's going to make a name off of me, it's just I don't plan on letting it happen.
Now, when you talk about that competitive fire you have, like, so, like, if you're playing a game with a family, is that competitive fire there? Like, you don't let up, like, it's, you know, you're like, look, I can't lose.
Yeah, I don't. You know, my son, you know, he's into video games. He's 6 years old. I've never let him win a game. But he's gotten really, really good at a lot of the games that we play, and some of the games I just can't beat him in. And he's super competitive as well, too. He gets it from his dad. But, yeah, I mean, even my children I won't let win. That's how competitive I am.
Yeah, I was talking to Walt Harris the other day, and he was talking about being at Dave and Buster's with his son. He's like, you know, they're playing basketball. He's like, I can't let my son beat me. He goes, I just can't let it happen. He goes, he beat me a couple of games. He goes, but I won the series.
Yeah.
But as you talk about, hey, want to be more active. I mean, is there a goal you have amount of fights you want to get in before this calendar year's up?
I kind of just take it by fight, honestly. If you ask me at the beginning of the year, like how many fights I would like to have, I'd tell you 8. But you kind of gotta go, you know, with how your body feels and how the way things work out. But for me, like, I would think, you know, just a timeline perspective, you know, giving me enough time to train, give me enough time to take off in between fights. 4 or 5 seems pretty realistic, in terms of what I would like to do. So I'm getting one right now. It's already May. So hopefully, I can get some more, quick ones, really, you know, quick turnarounds, and hopefully get 4 or 5 this year.
Is that something that you have become a veteran of the sport, of listening to your body more, or maybe early on, maybe you didn't, and that adds some wear and tear to you?
Yeah. I mean, you just like with anything, you know, it's a part of the experience. When you're younger and you get in this game, it's, you know, you can go through a hard day of training and wake up the next day and you feel recovered. As you get older, it's a little different. Having to take care of my body a lot more, you know, with, you know, physical therapy type things in terms of like cryotherapy, ice baths, massages, things like that. But also just training smart as well too. Not trying to just run your body through the ringer, and, you know, fighters, it happens a lot. We have that mentality where we never feel like enough is enough. We always try to do that extra, you know, do that extra mile, you know, do that extra set of lifting, extra, you know, round of grappling, extra round of sparring. It's just ingrained in us, you know, because the stakes are higher than I feel in any other sport. You know, you lose a football game, okay, not a big deal. It's a team sport. You lose a baseball game, whatever the case may be. You lose in golf. Getting knocked out or getting submitted in front of, you know, potentially thousands of people, it's a stressful thing. So we always want to make sure that we cover all bases, you know. And so early on, you know, in our careers, I feel like we overtrain thinking that, but as we get older, we realize that I really didn't have to do that much. I actually felt better taking a day off now that I took a day off, you know? So with experience, you just kind of figure out, you know, where your body's at and what you need to do, and be able to navigate through a camp in a much smarter fashion rather than just, you know, throwing, you know, stones at a wall.
Obviously, cryotherapy is, over the past couple of years has really become the trend with athletes. And I've talked to so many guys who say, give me that cryotherapy tank over a cold tub. Are you the same way?
Yeah, man. I hate being cold, man. So being at an ice bath, you know, you got to be in there for like up to 10 to 15 minutes usually. It's miserable. The cryotherapy is miserable as well, too, but it's only usually about 2.5 to 3 minutes. So it's not too bad. So you have that focus, that mindset. You just go in there and just, you know, grind your teeth and get in there and get out. And it makes it, you know, a lot less painful than sitting 15 minutes in an ice bath.
Yeah, I've done that cold tub before. That's not fun. There's nothing fun about that. Nah, but, of course, you got the fight coming up here on May the 25th. CFFC 75. Tarion, I appreciate the time. Of course, let me know everything for you out on social media. And, of course, those sponsors that will help you out.
Instagram, you can follow me, Flash_MMA, same thing on Twitter. Facebook is just Tarion Flashware, and, shout out to Phantom Athletics as well as, Quest Nutrition for taking care of me in this camp, as well as Virus and, Hayabusa. Shout out to my camps, A4 Fitness, CMMA over in Gardena, Chad George and all those guys, as well as Black House MMA and Gardena, man. It's been like I said, it's been a great camp. I can't thank those guys enough, and I'm excited to, you know, that CFFC is having me and, you know, putting me in the co-main event as well, too. And it's going to be on UFC Fight Pass, so hopefully, you know, everyone can tune in if you haven't bought tickets. I'm looking to do as always, try to put on a great show and go out there and just, you know, fight my butt off.
And there was my conversations with Ian Hynes, Zach Cummings, Walt Harris, and Terrion Ware. Really appreciate those guys coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, of course, presented by Roman. But Daniel, Thursday night, it is PFL 2. And, you know, I mentioned earlier on the podcast, this was a fight card that, you know, when I saw it, you know, initially, of course, this fight card has gone through some changes. My first thought was like, man, damn, this is a nice little fight card. And to me, like, this is a major week for the PFL. I mean, as we're doing the show here on Wednesday night, I don't get the sense that the card is getting a ton of the press that maybe you would, that I'm sure that they would hope for, just because of the fact that there's no Bellator, there's no UFC fight card. But when you look up and down this fight card, Daniel, there's some names that people are going to recognize. I mean, we've got, you know, the champions from featherweight and lightweight returning, Lance Palmer, Nathan Schultz, but there's other names that everyone's going to know. Andre Harrison, Nate Andrews, who's been the CES champion, Rashid Magomedov, Jeremy Kennedy, Damon Jackson, Steven Seiler. So there's a lot of notable names on this fight card. Of course, you know, we should mention that a couple of fighters are off this event. Popo Bezeja, who was supposed to take on Jeremy Kennedy, he missed weight on Wednesday morning, missed weight by 9 pounds, ended up getting admitted to the hospital. His coaches actually pulled him from this fight. Also, Alejandro Almeida, he missed weight. Of course, those are both fighters that are going to be in the 45-pound tournament. So now Jeremy Kennedy, who is supposed to take on Popo Bezeja, and Luis Rafael Laurentino, who is supposed to take on Alejandro Almeida, Kennedy and Laurentino will now face each other. Also, Hany Torres ultimately did not get a license from the New York State Athletic Commission, so he has been ruled out of this season. And his opponent, Ramsey Ninja, will be awarded 3 points towards a potential playoff spot, even though this fight will not happen. But, you know, Dan, when I look at my top reasons to watch this fight card, I don't think my number one is going to be your number one. And my number one is actually Nate Andrews.
Ooh, do tell. Why is he your number one?
Well, he is a guy that I've had a chance to interview countless times over the years, and he is a guy that has been, him and his management have been trying to get in the UFC. You know, one of the knocks that people will say about Nate Andrews, and, you know, is the fact they'll say he's got a padded record. I understand why people say that, but this is a guy that, you know, based on conversations I've had with, you know, people around him and his management, I get the sense that there's not exactly a lot of people that were lining up to fight Nate Andrews. He's got a great record, 15-1, but being a 155-pound fighter, the thing that I was always kind of told was the UFC didn't like his age, which is 35 years old. I mean, look, that's you know, an older fighter at 155 pounds. So to me, it's just because I've had a chance to get to know Nate over the past couple of years, and the fact of this was a guy on the regional scene that you would have thought would have potentially gotten that UFC offer, but now he gets this PFL offer, which, I mean, look, I mean, at the end, whatever your thoughts are of the PFL, man, as long as these checks are cashing, why would you not want to go to the PFL right now when you know, go out there and win 4 or 5 fights in a 6-7 month period and you can be a millionaire?
Yeah, that's why it's so crazy when these guys miss weight. I mean, Popo Bezeja is off the card because he missed weight, and it's just life-changing money, especially for a fighter who the UFC looked at and said, nah, man, 35, get out of here. So I like that that's your number one. My number one's really a broader point, and it's not only a takeaway or about PFL 13, but PFL in general, and that is what I'm looking forward to is learning about fighters I've never heard of before. Mm-hmm. I think the PFL does the best job of scouting in all of MMA. I really do. Because when I look at season one, there were a lot of names that I wasn't aware of that were just exceptionally talented. And especially the international scouting. I don't know And maybe that's – I mean, you're a guy who really has great relationships. And I would be interested, Jason, like how does the PFL find these guys? I look at a guy like Movlid Kabilov. I don't know how to say his name. I promise you I will after PFL 13. He's got a tough fight against Damon Jackson. This guy is 13-0. His nickname is Killer. I mean, he's got finish after finish on his resume. I look at him. I've never heard of him before, and he's not the only name. So for PFL, Jason, my big takeaway is on these opening nights of the tournaments, it's the opening night of featherweight, lightweight, I'm just excited to see some new names and even some names I've kind of forgotten, like a name like Akhmed Aliyev, who I remember watching on some old KSW cards where he showcased a lot of potential, but he was still green. So I'm just looking forward to learning some new names. And the way this card is set up is really a fighter who I'm very, very aware of versus a guy who I look at as an unknown, but surely has plenty of talent.
Well, I mean, the way that a lot of these fights come together is it's the relationships that, you know, Ray Sefo has with managers and just people in the fight game. And also, you know, when you're Ray Sefo, it's not hard when you know there's a $1 million prize that manager just going to be hitting you up saying, hey, I got this guy, I got that guy. You know, so that's how a lot of this stuff does come together. You know, so and I love the point you bring up there. You know, like the opening round, I guess you kind of say with this term is like, you're like, okay, who am I going to find out who some of these guys are? I mean, you mentioned about Aliyev. Yeah, he's definitely someone that I have circled on this fight card. Yeah, but I'll tell you, my number two reason to watch is one of the men that's going to be in the main event. That's Lance Palmer. And one of the interesting things that has come out this week is the fact of, you know, once again, under a new gym, now training with Mark Henry. Of course, you know, one time Lance was out Team Alpha Male. Then I want to say he was out in Colorado with some of the guys that left Alpha Male. And now under Mark Henry, and he takes on Alex Gilpin here. Now, that name may sound familiar to some people. That's because he was on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series last year, and he got a Darce choke win there. He had fought in ACB prior to that. And, I mean, look, he's going to be a massive underdog in this fight. No one, you know, outside of his friends and family, you know, they're the only ones that are going to think that he has a chance to win this fight. But to me, you know, it's kind of, do we see a little bit of a different Lance Palmer now training under Mark Henry?
I like it. I like it. I mean, I will go with Lance Palmer and Andre Harrison as my two and three reasons. And Lance Palmer and Andre Harrison to me are just the – I mean, there's a reason why they're the only two featherweights on the main card. And this is a stacked featherweight tournament. But these are the two guys that you think are likely to meet in the finals. And they've already fought twice, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see them fight once again. I think they're both due for impressive victories on the main card here. Like, Lance Palmer is so exceptionally talented, and he's really you know, if you don't know the story, dude's a high-level prospect at the beginning out of Ohio State, and he went from prospect to champion to a great fighter in the World Series of Fighting and then the PFL. He's a name that I think at some point will fight in the UFC. He's a name I had in the honorable mentions for my list of most valuable non-UFC fighters. But Andre Harrison, I mean, he's got a W over Lance Palmer, and he's also a fighter who would have been in the UFC if he was a lot more entertaining in the earlier portion of his career. So my number two and three reasons are the top featherweights in the tournament, Palmer and Harrison.
Yeah, my number three that I did have down was Popo Zea versus Jeremy Kennedy. So obviously that's not happened. You know, you mentioned about Andre Harrison. He's gone through, I want to say Peter Pettis is his third, maybe even fourth opponent for this fight card. And for Peter Pettis, you know, some of our listeners may remember that name. He's fought in various promotions. He's fought on the Contender Series where he lost to Julio Arce. And, of course, look, in this fight, you know, Peter Pettis is a striker. He's going to stop that takedown of Andre Harrison. And, you know, and I think one thing, if I was going to knock PFL for anything, these tournaments are so set up for wrestlers.
They are with the way tiebreakers break down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%, dude.
I mean, it's completely set up for wrestling. I mean, like literally, if Dan, we're coaching a fighter who has a wrestling ability, I'm just go in and take him down immediately. Lay on for 5 minutes.
Let's win the first round and survive the second. I mean, that can absolutely be your strategy, and you're going to be successful.
Yeah, I will tell you, one of the things that I do find interesting when you look at the fight card line for this one, there's a common characteristic on the preliminary card. I don't know if it really jumped out to you, but it jumped out to me. Outside of the Schultz matchup, the other three fights all have former UFC fighters in it.
Ooh, yeah, absolutely.
And you got to think that was done on purpose because since the prelims will be on ESPN2.
That is interesting. I hadn't thought about it. But the thing is, like, that probably was done on purpose, but it's not like any of these names matter to the casual fan. Now, these names will matter because, these fights are interesting, and two of those names are on my list to complete it. Jeremy Kennedy, Damon Jackson, even though they're all incredibly talented, but they're definitely didn't get names in the UFC. So I'm looking forward to the ESPN2 card, and I'm looking forward to, in particular, my number four is Jeremy Kennedy. He went 3-1 in the UFC, and I tell you what, that one loss is aging real, real well. That being to Alexander Volkanovski. Since then, he went to Morocco. He got a knockout win. He went to Saudi Arabia, got a finish there. So Jeremy Kennedy, 26 years old Canadian fighter with only one loss to Alexander Volkanovski. I think where PFL really succeeds is signing these UFC talents who the UFC screwed up on by letting go.
My number four is actually Nathan Schultz. Of course, he was, going into last season's PFL, he wasn't a guy that I think a lot of people really pointed to as potentially winning that tournament, especially the fact that he had lost at the tail end of the World Series of Fighting. But when you look at that run that he went on last year, I mean, you talk about – look at these names. Beat Chris Wade twice. Beat Jason High, had the draw against Johnny Case, a majority draw, and then he beat Rashid Magomed to win it all. I mean, he did not have an easy road. So for me, it's more about how does a returning champion who didn't have the fanfare in season one of the PFL, how does he show an evolution in his fight game?
Yeah, man, that's a nice one. My number five is Damon Jackson. This is a fighter who grew up in the Legacy Fighting Championship. He got a win over Leonard Garcia, won the championship there. And that was a big-time victory. He went on to be a late replacement, and he lost to Yancy Medeiros. He then lost to Hani Jason, but that fight was a no contest after Jason tested positive for a diuretic. And then he had a draw, and he was out of the UFC in 2016. Since then, he has won, I believe, 7 fights out of 8. With his lone loss being to Kevin Aguilar, and he's got a 5-fight win streak. A lot of times fighters have that early run in the UFC. It doesn't go well. And as they get to age 30, they start to get on a run where they're in their prime. And I think Damon Jackson's in his prime and a fighter to watch here.
My number five is Steven Seiler. You look at the run Steven Seiler has been on since those 4 losses that he had in a row in the UFC and Titan back in 2013 and 2014. He has 4 losses since that. They're to Andre Harrison, Akeem Dawodu, and Lance Palmer twice. So his losses are against, very top-notch competition. So to me, it's how does he kind of bounce back, and taking on, I'm not even going to try to say his opponent's name because I will butcher the hell out of this guy's name, but I'm just going to call him G. GR is going to be his name. He's 11-3-2. So to me, it's Steven Seiler, and he's one of the reasons to draw me to that preliminary card on ESPN2.
I totally agree, man. I mean, this is a great card. Like you look at the list between the both of us, we still haven't mentioned Islam Ahmedov, who may have won the tournament if he didn't have to pull out last year. Rashid Magomedov, also another lightweight to look forward to. There is a reason to watch each and every fight on this PFL 13 card, and I'm excited.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the featherweight tournament is kind of like the women's lightweight tournament, that it's, in an ideal scenario, it's Lance Palmer versus Andre Harrison, just like PFL's hoping for a final of Kayla Harrison versus Sarah Kaufman.
Yeah, I definitely think that's – I agree with your sentiment there. And I mean, do you have a dark horse in either tournament that maybe isn't a name that's a favorite that you think might win either lightweight or featherweight?
I don't, man. I don't. I'd love to see Nate Andrews go out there and win it all. And that's just more of the fact of I've got a chance to know Nate over the years, so kind of a rooting interest. I mean, to me, 45, it's Lance Palmer's tournament to lose.
Yeah, I think
don't,
so, too.
I don't know if there – I mean, I guess I would – I don't. I mean, Andre Harrison, I would be the guy that I would label as number two. But I mean, Jeremy Kennedy, I think you can't rule him out either.
Yeah, I think you can't either. You can't rule out any of the former UFC guys there. I'm just gonna go Mavlid Kabilov. I don't know anything about him, but his nickname's Killer. He's 13-0. I'm riding with Mavlid Kabilov, and then that lightweight tournament. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Ahmed Aliyev is your dark horse, if that even counts. Maybe not. But yeah, man, I'm looking forward to PFL 13.
I do want to mention the question I got from Steve Montgomery. Of course, Steve has been going through various opponents for his fight next week at FFC. He's now, I believe, on opponent number 4. Actually, should have an interview up this weekend with him on theamereport.com. And he goes, what's your opinion on Donald Cerrone? The guy doesn't ever seem to wait for what he deserves. He always takes the toughest fights that come with less recognition instead of waiting for a super fight or a title shot. I just, you know, the way I'd put that, Daniel, it's just in his DNA not to sit on the sidelines. And you know, it also kind of, I think you look at it and I think he's probably a realist when it comes to the lightweight division. I mean, yes, you know, we expect that it's going to be Khabib and Dustin in September, potentially in Abu Dhabi. But, you know, if that Irishman wants to fight, the UFC is going to book Conor versus Khabib.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's – look, what we've learned is the UFC is going to book whatever the hell they want. And to me, Khabib, Conor – is where the money is. And for the UFC, it's all about where the money is. And there's value in not sitting on the sidelines. The value is you get a paycheck. Mm-hmm. You get a big money fight. And the UFC is only going to book one Conor McGregor fight. And it looks like they're booking one Conor fight every 2 years. So to just sit and wait for a McGregor fight, especially when you're obviously not number one. I mean, the Khabib fight, unfortunately for everybody else, that's the fight that has the best story. And it's the fighting they're going to go towards.
The thing that I love about Donald Cerrone is, you know, you're not going to turn it into a boring Donald Cerrone fight. The guy's just going to bring the fight. And when you talk about reasons to watch a fight card, anytime Donald Cerrone's on a fight card, that's going to be your reasons to watch.
Yeah, man. I mean, Donald Cerrone is an OG would-watch fighter, must-watch fighter. And it's incredible that he's maintained that fight style to this day, and he's like peaking at this point. So for Donald Cerrone, I mean, he is now going down to me as one of the all-time great fighters in UFC history, and it's just a matter if he's going to be able to put a pretty belt around his waist.
Before we get into the bare knuckle press conference, I put this on social media, but I want to mention it here on the podcast, and I like to call this a tip for the combat sports fan. So I had to change my credit card information for my DAZN account this week because my previous credit card number got someone got a hold of it. So earlier today I was just kind of going through my credit card and I'm like, DAZN, $22, what the hell? And then I go online and it says subscription price $19.99, and of course I'm on the live chat with the DAZN and they're trying to get it rectified because I still should be grandfathered in to that $9.99 price. So tips for the fight fan is if you gotta change your credit card to DAZN, beware that your subscription price may be going up.
Is your thing gonna go back down?
I'm hoping so. They're supposed to give me an update tomorrow.
Interesting. Well, yeah, the tip is that, and I think the also tip is interact with the live chat feature. Maybe it'll work in your favor. Because that's kind
of
lame.
It was one of those things at first I was pissed off. I ain't gonna lie. I was like, what the? But then I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe mistakes happen. But yeah, I mean, I know at some point, I knew at some point I was just like, I was going to, you know, fork over the $100 for the year. I mean, I still think, but it's, you know, I think one of the things that I liked in his own product, you know, primarily because I am a court coach, that's how I get the Bellator product. And, you know, June, you've got the Joshua fights on there, the GGG fights on there, the Bellator card at MSG's on there. But, you know, it's one of those things I kind of look at them and I just really wonder what is the long-term future for them in the U.S.? I mean, I just don't think they can be a streaming combat sports network and think that if someone doesn't get a year subscription that they're going to pay $20 a month.
Yeah.
Especially when ESPN Plus is $5.
Yeah, and Netflix is so much cheaper. When you price people out and you're not the big dog, it's just I don't think that's the right trajectory. I think this is a company who, man, they spent a lot of money on their sports rights, and they're starting to realize that the numbers they wanted in terms of subscribers aren't there. So damn, let's just, you know, charge them $20 a month, and it's not going to work out.
You know the product that really should be on the zone is?
What's that? Darts?
Bare knuckle boxing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because so this is an interesting event for me because I live in Tampa. They're coming to Tampa for this Paulie and Artem fight. So, you know, look, I've said this. I'm not a bare knuckle boxing fan. I'll tell you, I was having a conversation with Sean Wheelock last week, and, you know, I told him, I said, hey, I'm going to go to this event. I'm going as a fan. I'm not going to cover it. I'm going simply as a fan to see it in person and see if this thing changed my mind. Sean's like, he goes, Jason, he goes, I think this is going to change your mind. You're going to see it. You're going to see how tight and cool these fights are, and you're going to, you know, become a fan. And, you know, one of the things that I am hoping to do the week of that event is to do a sit-down conversation with David Feldman, of course, the president of Bare Knuckle FC, and just kind of talk to him about it. And, you know, the press conference on Monday, first off, I understand why they did it in New York to maximize media exposure. I'll tell you this right now. I work in marketing. I haven't seen one ad for Bare Knuckle in the Tampa Bay area this week, and tickets went on sale. Tickets, you know, I thought, you know, not bad. I mean, they start at $40 and, you know, ringside is $200, so not too bad. You know, I don't understand why they're coming to Tampa, Daniel. Obviously, they have the commission shop, but if I'm running a bare knuckle event, I'm going to Miami.
What's the difference between Miami and Tampa for someone who's not a Florida MMA scenester?
Well, it's a 4-hour drive, but think about the origin of fighting on YouTube with Kimbo Slice. Why would you not want to tap into that market?
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. In terms of a scale of 1 to 10, how cringeworthy was that press conference?
Look, probably a 10 because, like, it came across like they were trying to – they were playing pretend, you know, with Paulie Malignani. Paulie Malignani, whatever. Him and him and Lobov getting in a fight, it almost felt like pretend press conference.
It seemed fake. Like yeah, first off, okay, you're in TV. I'm an audio guy that does video interviews. Did no one decide to bring a light to that press conference? And there's only one microphone? Like, I'm sitting going, man, if you're trying to come off as this top-tier promotion – this is not a great presentation.
And they only had like two security guards in between the two fighters.
It's just like it to me, that press conference was, let's do something crazy and potentially sell pay-per-views.
But I will say this, for Bare Knuckle, this is one hell of a fight to put on. When you look at the available talent you have to put on these shows, I mean, you're kind of capitalizing on the Conor McGregor deal here.
Mm-hmm, totally.
You know, And I do think we look at Feldman. He knows how to promote a fight, apparently, when I look at this fight. He's not getting A++, but he's starting at a massive disadvantage in that he's promoting bare knuckle fighting. Mm-hmm. So when you look at all of the available resources, this is a pretty smart plan. I'm going to watch this card. At least the highlights for sure. Like, I don't know if I'm going to actually purchase the pay-per-view. It's expensive.
$40?
is the pay-per-view. I just kind of think that price point scares more people away.
Yeah, like the only reason I want to buy it is to talk about it. I mean, we're going to talk about it next week, but I would at least like to watch it since you're going to be there. And it seems like a really pivotal card in the promotion's history. So I'll probably – but, I mean, I don't want to pay $40. But if you're a combat fan and if you like pro wrestling and mixed martial arts and boxing and all things in between, like, you're already going to spend $50 on the wrestling pay-per-view this weekend. It's a pretty heavy price point for that. So to go and spend that and then $40 on bare knuckle, I mean, you better have a six-figure job.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's odd to me about it, and this is coming from a Tampa resident, is I wonder how much they researched this market because in terms of MMA, there's just not many MMA shows, you know. RFC was a long-standing promotion here. You know, they probably haven't done a show in 2 years. I mean, and they did, I want to say, 42 events. You know, the venue that they did shows at closed. So a lot of the MMA that you get around here is more amateur MMA. You know, you have some boxing shows that take place on. So I'm interested to see how well this does at the box office, I'm sure. I'm guessing Conor McGregor is going to be in Tampa on June the 22nd.
Wow. You think so?
Oh, I would be surprised if he's not.
Yeah, yeah.
If he is there,
yeah.
The post fight might be, you know.
The post fight might cancel the fight. It might be good to Skype and Jason. That's all I'm saying. Is he's a bit of a crazy like Conor being in the flesh is the most likely. Look, I'm just concerned that a dolly's going to be thrown. Okay.
Yeah, that is going to be interesting. That event's going to be at the Florida State Fairgrounds, which there's a casino right across the street from it. So that could be very interesting. One of the questions we did get in relation to the bare knuckle boxing in general from Dirty Bird 212 was basically asking, you know, why are our wrestlers turning to boxing? When it comes to bare knuckle, Daniel, the simple answer is this. They're getting paid more money.
Yep. Money is what we all work for. And for these wrestlers, if the paycheck's bigger here, I think they're willing to do damage to their body to get it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Zou Enwanu. He tweeted, I want to say Monday. He's like, hey, man, I got a great offer from bare knuckle, but it's just something that he's not interested in doing. But I'm interested. When I go to this event, will it change my mind? I don't think it will, Daniel. I really don't.
You don't think so?
I think ultimately the problem is when I look at a lot of the fighters you see in bare knuckle, it's aging MMA fighters.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's also kind of, this where aging MMA fighters just, you know, there wasn't that nest egg of money that they saved up because the money just wasn't good.
It is sad. And that's the theme of bare knuckle. The subliminal message is that it's aging fighters doing more damage to their body in a more brutal sport. Than a sport that was already brutal in mixed martial arts. So I understand that. But, I mean, look, Sean Wheelock, if he vouches for it, he tells you, Jason, you go out there and you're going to enjoy the show. Potentially we see the narrative change. But, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like you. I'm pretty pessimistic on bare knuckle. And I think I'll be interested to see what your big takeaway is after going out there and attending the show.
You know, one of the things I think would be interesting is if David Feldman could – speak at the annual Association of Boxing Commission Combative Sports meeting, because that may be his best way to get more commissions on the side. Because right now, I mean, he has a commission shop. It's just the way it is. And I'm interested. You kind of see how it plays out. But man, that press conference, man, that was just. I turn it on. And I'm just like, oh my god, what the hell am I watching?
Yeah. I totally agree with you. It definitely came across as minor league. They're trying to figure it out. And the one thing they are doing right is, again, using the available resource to put on interesting fights. And Pauly versus Lobov, I'm interested to see what happens if these two guys fight. I mean, I think it's going to be a pretty easy win for Pauly, but we shall see.
Artem Lobov has nothing to lose in that fight. He's supposed to lose to the boxer.
Is there odds on this fight anywhere?
I haven't seen any. If there are, I would imagine Pauly's got to be at least a 5-1 favorite.
I mean, yeah, he's like, I can't find odds anywhere.
He's a legit boxer. I mean, like, you know, to me, Pauly has everything to lose in this one.
Yeah, man.
You got to think that Pauly's motivation in this one is, let me win this and convince Conor McGregor to a boxing fight. That's got to be the motivation.
I think so, and I don't think he has any shot of that happening.
No, I don't see the UFC letting that happen.
No, not at all. Man, I can't find any odds for this bare knuckle. You would think somewhere.
It'll probably come out like the day of the fight. But yeah. You know it's going to be – Artem Lobov's going to be a massive underdog in that fight. You know, I saw Joey Beltran's going to be on that card. Abel Velasquez, who's fought in Titan. He's a local fighter. He's going to be on the card. So I'll be there. And, of course, we'll talk about it on the podcast if it changes my mind. But that's still that's a month away, so still a lot of other things going on in MMA leading up to that one. But, of course, I do appreciate everyone taking time out to listen to this podcast. Of course, one of the great ways to support this podcast is to give a rating and review on the various podcasting platforms. Another great way is to support our sponsors. Of course, this week's episode brought to you by Romans. Go to getroman.com/MMA report. to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's a special offer this month that Romans is giving the MMA Report podcast listeners. So just go to getroman.com/MMA Report. Do want to thank my guests for coming on this week's edition of the show, Ian Heinisch, Zach Cummings, Walt Harris, and Terry Alware. Be sure to hit up the MMAReport.com for various video content that we have up there. Going to have a couple of fire interviews that get posted here over the next couple of days. So always appreciate everyone checking out all my content over at the MMAReport.com and also on the MMA Report YouTube channel. So let's go wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a cannabis podcast. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
UFC, who is the big entity, has inked multi-year, multi-million dollar partnership with CBD company Aurora Cannabis. You're going to see that happen more often than not now. I don't think it's going to be too long before the NFL finally concedes and, you know, allows cannabis into the NFL. You know, there's been studies that have shown that cannabis benefits present-day players and former players. I'm a former player that definitely benefits from cannabis. I mean, it's cannabis or pills, okay? It's up to you. I don't know about you, but there's not really much of a comparison.
The Cannabis Podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.